just me.
It is cold. How can it be colder in here than it is outside? I just don't know that. We did tell you 9 weeks ago we get the boiler fixed, but that was a lie. And the boiler never got fixed. Actually, it's totally collapsed at this stage, so I think it's pumping out cold air. Anyway, I just want to share a little bit tonight, if I can, for about 15 minutes or so. Then we're going to pray and have one more song and then have some tea and coffee. And I want to talk a little bit about a passion that I have and also tie it into, I think, a biblical presentation of how we see faith today in Ireland, and also tie it into what's going on in the churches, I think, here and beyond across Ireland. And so I hope that those three things will come together. So first off, my passion of many passions, but one of the things that I love to do is climb mountains. Now, I know at least one person here in the room has just about climbed Everest, and I come not very close to that, but you're all looking around who that is. It's Tim Ebbs. No, it's not. I won't. You don't want to embarrass you and say that, do you? It's Graham Kinch down the back there. He's nearly made it up the top of Everest. So why don't you come up here and share your story instead of my sermon then? That would be great. No, I think, I do. I love climbing or walking, and comparatively speaking to someone who's done Everest, but I love hill climbing or walking. And the first big mountain I won't say climbed because I got the train up, was the Jungfraujoch in Switzerland. Has anyone heard of that? The Jungfraujoch, yeah, you're nodding, Andreas. That's about 15,000 feet or thereabouts, and I got the train up, and I just walked on the glacier there, and I kind of fell in love with just being that high up and wanting to be that up. So since then, I've climbed the Sugar Loaf in Wicklow. Yeah, thanks, appreciate that. No, I have climbed some of the smaller mountains in Europe, much smaller. But I do love going to the Wicklow Mountains. I love going on my own and just getting out there for a night and camping if I can. And hopefully, God willing, I'll be able to bring my son Ethan with me when he grows up, and look forward to that. And I believe some of us in the church last night went on a midnight hike in Glendalough. Is that true? Yeah, John Fung bought some. Five went out and many came back? Okay, you got back anyway, which is good. So listen, I love climbing mountains, and I think for me, I love it because I get away from it all. I like the physical exertion. I like challenging myself, and I like the idea of starting somewhere and finishing somewhere else and then coming back. And I think also I like it from a spiritual point of view, because if we look in the Bible, mountains are very, very important objects for a teaching aspect, but also they're very important when we look at the progression of a journey. And tonight I want to speak about, just very quickly, about two mountains in the Bible. And I speak them from just a passion of climb, but also I hope that we can learn from this, these two mountains in the Bible. And the question is, what mountain are you on? The first mountain is Mount Sinai, a famous mountain, which is somewhere in Israel, part of the world. I have never climbed that. Maybe, Graham, you've climbed that as well. But it's basically over that direction. I'm not exactly sure where it is, but I know it's a beautiful mountain to climb, and many people still climb it. But it's famous because Moses climbed it, yeah? Remember Moses? The guy with the big beard, Charlton Heston lookalike. He climbed Mount Sinai in Exodus 32-34. And I think I just want to tell the story of his climb first. Now, Moses found himself in a very difficult situation, didn't he? He led a whole group of people, basically refugees, out of captivity in Egypt into the desert. And the people were rebelling, and the people were giving out, and they had nothing to drink, they had nothing to eat. And eventually God said, look, we need to put some sort of order on what's going on here. Come on up the mountain, and I will show you the law. And so Moses started climbing his first metaphorical but real mountain. And there's a few points I want to make about this mountain climb. The first thing is that Moses descends on his own, doesn't he? He leaves the people on his own. He tracks off from his own. He spends 40 days and 40 nights up that mountain. The next point he received a law on top of the mountain, didn't he? Has anyone seen that skit by Mel Brooks, where Mel Brooks goes up the mountain dressed as Moses and he comes down with 3 tablets, not 2, and he actually drops one. He's convinced there was 15 commandments, but we know there was only 10 commandments. And so Moses goes up on his own, and at the top he receives the law. Then when he comes down to fear and judgment. He goes up on his own, he receives the law very legalistically, and he comes down to fear and judgment. And then the second time he has to go up again, doesn't he? He goes up again because the people rebel. The golden calf incident, which John talked about a few weeks ago, remember? Basically, the people rebelled, and Moses had to go back up the mountain again, climbing the same mountain twice. And I bet you Graham Kinch hasn't done that, not yet. But I think climbing a second mountain even sometimes can be quite arduous. Anyway, from my point of view, Moses had to go back up, and this time he came down the mountain, and the people hadn't rebelled, and there was this sense of the veil over his face. Do you remember that story? His face was glowing with the presence of God, and he had to cover his face. Now, the reason why I'm telling you this, what were you making those 4 points for, Rob? Well, I think I've just been going through a journey myself as I climb mountains, metaphorical and physical, and asking myself, like, is that the type of religion that I live out in my life, where I go off on my own, I climb a mountain, whatever task it may be, whatever I have to do, I get to the top, I receive something legalistically, I come back down, and I enter into an environment of fear. Does my life just go over and over and through that sort of cyclical motion over and over again? Because I'm going to talk about a second mountain in a moment, which is a mountain I think we're more called to. And I think, as I've thought about that personally and thought about that corporately, okay, I think most of us in Ireland, I don't know, maybe you're not from Ireland, but most of us exist on that mountain. Most of us, especially from a more Catholic point of view or a Protestant point of view, most of our churches exist in this sort of legalistic Mount Sinai mode, where things are done on our own, there's a law given, we have to stay under the law, there's this kind of idea of being suppressed by God, we're bowed down, we're subservient, and it's not accessible. And recently I said this to a mate of mine. I had lunch with him there last week, and I said, look, for you, what's God like for you? And he said, well, he's kind of like this man up, who lives on top of a mountain. He's got a big beard. He just wants to tell me what to do, and I don't really understand him. And I think that frame which paints the picture, if you like, of the God of Mount Sinai. And I think, maybe not you, but I think most people exist in that understanding of God. They exist in that legalistic viewpoint of God. He's kind of up there. He's kind of out there. He's kind of in a cloud, if you like. And if I get even close to him, there's going to be huge consequences. He doesn't really care about me. He just wants to give me a law that I can't really have freedom in. And it's going to lead into judgment and fear. And I think if we're honest with ourselves, we can see that coming out now with the current scandals in the Roman Catholic Church, because everyone was suppressed and controlled. And it's not just them. It's in many other churches too. And so that mountain doesn't sound like a very exciting place to climb, does it? No, it's not a good thing at all. And I think most of the Old Testament, if you like, was just continuously the people going up that mountain, coming down the mountain, going up that mountain, and just being bondaged and wrapped up in fear and oppression and judgment. Now, the second mountain I want to compare with that, and that is the mountain of, I don't know the exact name, but that's the mountain that Jesus went up on the Transfiguration. When I say transfiguration, do you understand what I'm saying? In Matthew, Mark, and Luke, there's a story called the Transfiguration, when Jesus also climbed a mountain. Now, for those who love reading the Bible and like to know the comparative sort of language of the Bible, Matthew's story of the Transfiguration in chapter 17, I've just been reading this myself, as I think about, am I walking up Sinai or am I walking up a mountain, like I'm going to explain to you now, the Transfiguration. Matthew compares these 4 points very much so when he calls us to climb a different type of mountain. Now notice the difference when Jesus climbs the mountain. First thing, Jesus doesn't go on his own when he climbs up the mountain for the Transfiguration. He climbs with who? Peter, James, and John. Now, there's the first point. I think, speaking personally from a leadership point of view, I think a lot of leaders have a tendency to go out on their own. We live in a very sort of priestly society still, where the priest is the one who walks the mountain, and the people don't. They just receive a blessing from the priest, if you like. And I think the first point to make, and it might seem quite simple, but the profundity, I think, is extreme, in that Jesus takes three people with him to walk that mountain. Now, they would have had to walk up, take time, stop for some sort of break, chatted, interacted. So from the very outset, there's an inclusivity here that's very much indicated in the story. And so I guess if you're walking on your own in your faith, that's the first question. If you find yourself walking on your own up that mountain, I think we need to be honest with ourselves. We need to gather around other people who are also walking up the mountain. The second thing, which is the point that I love and have found especially encouraging recently, and someone else has been saying to me in the church, is that Moses on Mount Sinai received the law, okay? The Ten Commandments on the tablets, Charlton Heston style. Now, what did Jesus receive in Matthew 17? Can anyone remember? He didn't receive any law. There was nothing for him that was written down to bring back down to the people, which you come to in a moment. He simply heard this. This is my son in whom I'm well pleased. This is my son or daughter in whom I'm well pleased. And I think that totally is the opposite of the idea of the law, if you like, this idea of affirmation. And I think a lot of times, if we're honest, even in this church, in my life, we exist in a place of law. Cause and effect. I do this to get that. But how much of us climb the mountain of understanding the true affirmation of God, and that our God is pleased with us? Because at the two most important times of Jesus' ministry, well, two of probably the, not the most important, which is his resurrection, but at the beginning of his baptism, Jesus says, "This is my son in whom I'm well pleased." On the transfiguration, "This is my son in whom I'm well pleased." And that, to me, seems a much more inclusive environment of relating to God. And I don't know if you can accept the pleasure of God, really accept it. I sometimes find that hard because of how I grew up and the family I grew up in. I love my parents, my father's amazing, but I still had to do something to get something. Moses had to go up the mountain to get the law to come back down. Jesus went up with his friends just for his father to say, "I'm pleased with you. Well done." But here's the interesting point. Peter, James, and John defaulted back to the Old Testament and they fell face down because they were fearful of this sort of Old Testament God, if you like. And what did Jesus say to them? He said, "Get up. Don't be afraid. This is my Father." And so, are you climbing the mountain? Are we climbing the mountain? Is our church climbing the mountain, which is legalistic and like Sinai, where there's a pioneer just blazing the way? Or are we doing it together in the affirmation of God? And the last point, when Moses came down from Mount Sinai, again, Matthew was always comparing these intentionally for the Jewish audience. When Moses came down from his mountain, it was into a place of fear and judgment and pain and sorrow, the golden calf and so on. When Jesus came down, what was the first thing he did? He healed a young boy. He healed the least in Jewish society. And I don't think we really get, again, the profundity of that point or the significance of that point, that Jesus healed the least in the societal model. And so what is that saying? He's gone up the mountain, he's hearing the affirmation with his friends, and he's coming back down and he's releasing it. What happens with Moses? He puts the veil over his face to hide it. It's hidden in the Old Testament. It's hidden in our churches in Ireland. It's released in the Transfiguration by the healing of a young boy. But again, it's in that model of affirmation, of pleasure, not fear, not cause and effect. It's in that sense of climbing the mountain in a release of affirmation. And I don't know, just stop for a moment. What mountain are you climbing? Are you climbing the Sinai? Am I climbing the Sinai just purely in a legalistic way to get something? Or am I on a journey of affirmation with my Father, who's pleased with me and doesn't want me to be afraid or doesn't want me to be fearful? and wants me to have an unveiled face to release the glory of God into a broken and desolate world, which is in so need of redemption. What mountain are you honestly on? Are you on your own climbing? Or are you with other people, like-minded people climbing? Do you see someone else who is climbing a mountain on their own and you need to come along with them? Who is that person? And ultimately, what this is, for those theologians out there, to bring it all down, and not only for the theologians, for all of us, these two mountains are comparing the Old and the New Testament. The Old Testament is based on covenantal theology, where basically two groups entered into a covenant together. And as you know, in a covenant, if each party has to keep the covenant in order for it to be ratified. And what was happening was we were just breaking apart over and over again. No matter how many times we went up the mountain, we just weren't able to keep it. And that's why there was judgment, and that's why there was discipline, and that's why there was pain and sorrow. And then God said, this isn't working. Now, I know the significance of that was the God of the Old Testament different to the God of the New Testament. I don't think so. Rather, in his ability to use our free will, he was finding every possible way for us to come into relation with him and climb the mountain of affirmation and love. You see, for me, the New Testament is about promise. And so if I promised you 10 euros, irrespective of whether you wanting to take it, the promise is for me to give to you. You need to accept it. It's not a covenant, it's a promise. And therefore, when Jesus went up the mountain and this idea of affirmation and inclusivity and not fearful, Jesus knew that promise. And do you, do I? I think to compare the Old and New Testament, I was trying to think of a story recently. I was caught for speeding. Perish the thought. It was my son's fault. He said, Daddy, does the speedometer go above 120? And I was like, yes, let me show you. It's a lie for those on the internet. But basically, I was caught speeding. And the cop said to me, he said, I said, look, I'm really sorry. I shouldn't have been doing it. I was totally wrong. And he said to me, I'll let you off. Now, that's mercy. Yeah, that's mercy. And the Old Testament is based around mercy. God, in his mercy, because we broke the covenant, he was giving us mercy. The New Testament is, if I was pulled over by that cop, and not only would he let me off the ticket, but if he gave me 1,000 euro, even though I'd done something wrong, that's grace. And you're thinking, well, hold on a second, is Rob saying by doing something wrong we get something? I'm not saying that. I'm saying that there's something that we deserved in the promise of God, which is grace, which is something that we get irrespective of what we do. So the weird thing is, even if you don't climb any mountain and you stay in the valleys, God is still pleased with you. And again, I'm not saying that there's a necessity to have to do something to get something. It's just this idea of the pleasure of God and the affirmation of God. But do we exist in that realm, or is it in the legalistic realm? And I think to underpin all this, again, just something I've been contemplating, I just want to read out one scripture before we close, where actually the writer to Hebrews does exactly what I've just done in comparing these two mountains. This is Hebrews 12, Hebrews 12 from verse 18 to 24. Listen to this. So if you're turning to it there, I'll give you a couple of seconds. Hebrews 12, 18 to 24. This is exactly what I've just said, but the writer of the Hebrews is saying it. You have not come to a mountain that can be touched and that is burning with fire, to darkness, to gloom, and to storm, to a trumpet blast, or such a voice speaking words that those who heard it begged under the covenant that no further word be spoken to them, because they could not bear what was commanded. That's the Mount Sinai. That's the language of Mount Sinai. If even an animal touched the mountain, it would be stoned. And that's the whole Jewish temple system. The sight was so terrifying that Moses said, I'm trembling with fear. Now again, there's a great holiness in that, but there's also, it's exclusive, if you like. But here's what is the case for us today. But you have have come to Mount Zion, to the heavenly Jerusalem, to the city of a living God. You have come to thousands upon thousands of angels in joyful assembly, to the church of the firstborn, that's Jesus, whose names are written in heaven. You have come to God, the judge of all men, to the spirits of righteous man made perfect. You're made perfect through Jesus, who's the mediator of the new covenant, through the sprinkled blood that speaks a better word than the blood of Abel. And so ultimately what they were saying, the blood of Abel brought retribution and brought all sorts of separation, but the blood of Jesus brings the antithesis or the opposite of that. And I guess I say that as a means, personally, what mountain are you on? And I guess as I think corporately in this country, our church with a capital C, and as leaders of those churches, where am I leading people? What mountain am I leading them up? Or what mountain are the churches in general leading people up? I think if we're honest folks, and I've been part of this myself and I repented of it, we're leading people up Sinai. Because there's control, there's a sense of knowing exactly what will happen. But in the messiness of the transfiguration, as you are, it leads to an organic, inclusive, open system of church, which is very challenging for a leader. Because Jesus could have been like Moses and gone to the top of the mountain and come back down and said, "Oh, I've only seen it. Oh, I only know what it's like." But he brings his friends with him. He says, "Look, this is God, this is him. Now come back down the mountain and let's heal this young boy who is also at the moment climbing up Sinai. Let's show him a different mountain." And I think just before we pray then, just to say, I just hope that that's an encouragement for you. I hope that you will be able to ask the question, what mountain that you're on. And if you have questions about, you know, what mountain you are on, and you want advice about that or prayer for that, that's what leaders are here for. Your small group leaders, we're here to help you to walk the mountain with Christ up to this sense of affirmation. And if you're on your own, and if you're feeling isolated, and if you're feeling, "I don't know what it means, I find it difficult," come and talk to us, or come and talk to me, or if you know someone in that situation, because there's nothing worse than doing it on your own. You're not meant to do it on your own. We're meant to walk together. And so I just want to play one clip to close, and I think to paint a picture of this mountain in a much better way that I can do is a fantastic guy, which I love to listen to and learn from and hone my own skills, and that's Rob Bell. And he essentially is talking about the mountain of transfiguration. He's talking about the resurrection, but he paints a beautiful picture of this God of affirmation and pleasure. So let's watch this and let's pray, and then let's have a cup of coffee together. So over to you, Bex.
Jesus is standing in front of the temple in Jerusalem, this massive, gleaming